The Tuesday morning to you, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, your host for today's daily dollop of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Since it is Tuesday, this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last dozen and a half years. Thanks for downloading, and I do hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on February 5th of 2017 under the headline California Gold Rush was sparked by a failed Oregon farmer. It's a rewriting and thorough re-researching of a much shorter column first published in May 2009. Here we go. Most residents of Western Oregon complain about the rain, especially this time of year. But arguably nobody has ever had more cause to complain about the soggy Willamette Valley climate than James W. Marshall. Marshall was a carpenter by trade, originally from New Jersey. Looking for new opportunities in the West, he settled on a land claim in Missouri in 1844 along the Platte River and promptly contracted malaria. Seeking a more healthy climate, he joined a late departing wagon train heading out the Oregon Trail and arrived in Willamette Valley late that year. Of course, when he arrived, he was greeted by the most miserable weather the Beaver State can dish out. Taking a claim, he tried to tough it out, but by late spring the rain had only gotten slightly warmer, and he was feeling sicker than ever. Finally, as the month of June made an unseasonably soggy and miserable appearance, he decided he'd had enough. He packed his things and headed south along the Siskiyou Trail into what was then the Mexican territory of Alta California. A month or so later, he found himself in Sutter's Fort, the first non-native settlement in the California Central Valley, near what is today Sacramento. Sutter's Fort was owned by John Sutter, a German fellow who was the alcalde, mayor, basically, of the settlement under a grant from the government of Mexico. Mayor Sutter dreamed of building an empire there in the balmy uplands of Central California, and when Marshall, who was, remember, a skilled carpenter, arrived, he was very happy to see him. Soon the two of them were in partnership on various projects. Sutter helped Marshall buy some land and cattle, and for a little while it looked like he was finally on his feet. But then the Mexican-American War broke out, and Marshall, who seems to have had some issues with impulse control, abandoned his new farm and joined the Bear Flag Rebellion under General John Fremont. Upon his return, some 9 months later, Marshall found all his cattle gone, stolen most likely. Without any livestock, he couldn't make his farm payments, so he lost the land. Then, Sutter hired him to oversee construction and subsequent operation of a water-powered sawmill to provide the wood with which Sutter's dreamed-of inland empire would be built. Marshall scouted a likely spot on the American River, and construction got underway. Things went well, but when it was done, Marshall realized the tail race, the canal that carried the water away after it turned the water wheel, was too narrow to let the water properly drive the saws. To fix this, he started coming down to the mill late at night, opening the sluice gates and letting the full impoundment of water roar down through the channel. Out of fear that a worker would be swept away and drowned, he didn't do this during the day. He would then come in the morning, close the sluice gates again, and examine the progress in the temporarily empty tail race bed. One morning when he was doing this, he found something in the bed that sparkled. It was a cluster of large yellow stones. When he beat on one, it smashed flat. Marshall, in a state of considerable excitement, showed the discovery to his construction crew. He gave them permission to hunt around for more gold during the lunch break, and then he saddled up and headed for Sutter's place to tell the boss about it. Sutter, when he found out, was horrified. He understood what Marshall did not, that with easy money underfoot, nobody would ever do a lick of actual work until it was all dug up, and if no workers could be hired, his dreamed-of empire would never be built. Sutter raced to the mill to beg everyone who knew to keep the find a secret, just for a few months, until the mill could be built. Of course word got out. Of course the labor market dried up as every able-bodied worker grabbed a gold pan and hit the hills. Of course the mills languished, and of course Sutter lost his investment. Had Sutter and Marshall cut their losses at that moment, or better yet, as soon as they found the gold, and thrown themselves into the race, collecting all the gold they could get their hands on as fast as they could have wound up rich men, probably richer than Sutter had dreamed his agrarian empire would make him. But they did not. Both of them continued stubbornly trying to make money the old-fashioned way, struggling to build Sutter's empire with hired labor while billions of dollars in gold crunched beneath their feet. Eventually, Sutter found himself plagued with aggressive squatters who hired lawyers to try to defeat his land claim, which was originally made through the Mexican government. The squatters also filched food from his fields and stole his cattle. Quote, "By this discovery of the gold, all my great plans were destroyed. Had I succeeded for a few years before the gold was discovered, I would have been the richest citizen on the Pacific shore. But it had to be different. Instead of being rich, I am ruined," he wrote in 1857 in Hutchings, California magazine. Marshall fared even worse. The squatters forced him off his land, and he lacked the resources to fight them. Like Sutter, he became a miner only reluctantly and not very successfully. He tried a vineyard, which worked well for a few years, but eventually failed as well. In the end, he wound up in a tiny cabin, eking out a living with a subsistence garden. Ironically, if he'd stayed in the Willamette Valley just one more month and experienced Oregon in the dry part of the spring, he probably never would have left. And his great-grandchildren might still be farming his land there today. Key sources in this story have included works by Ralph Friedman and Wild West Magazine. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. More info is at our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. Speaking of which, if you enjoy listening to me, you might check out some of my audiobooks. You can find them most easily with a search for my name on audible.com. Most are old pulp stuff, H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Rice Burroughs, Robert E. Howard, etc., but at least two of them are offbeat Oregon history type titles, so check them out if you're so inclined. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.